Hello, welcome back to Design Over Breakfast. Long time no see. Like we said, you know how the post-grad life can get sometimes. There has been a lot of moving around, a lot of figuring out. But we're back and it's super nice to catch up with Pratyush. And we also have a super cool guest joining us today. It's Tanmay, and I guess most of you know him, but I will let him introduce himself.
Hey guys, this is Tanmay here. I'm a product designer, graduated from the same college as Kamaljeet and Pratyush, ISD Rubika. Currently, I'm working for Vistaraku, which is a manufacturing company, which we make biodegradable leaf plates and packaging and bowls. So we do that, and on the side, I am majorly working on developing new products and experimenting with new natural materials, which could, you know, we could make some other stuff out of that.
That's super cool.
When all of us, like Kamaljeet, me, and like the rest of us in our class, when we arrived to college, I think you and a bunch of other seniors were the first ones to really talk to us, and you guys were the gateway to understanding exactly what college life is going to be. And I think I was a little scared when I came to college, didn't know what to expect, because school, usually, you know, there are lots of rules. But then you guys had like this really fun you guys are just a fun group of people, and it just it kind of set the precedent for a lot of us to also have fun, and because we knew that you guys are also really good in class and are doing so well, we knew that it's possible to, or at least we targeted to at least have fun and kind of balance our work. So yeah, so it's basically fun to now have you on.
It's definitely great to hear that from you guys. I mean, it's a big compliment, I would say, for all of us to hear that we were able to, you know, guide you maybe in some way, or make you feel more comfortable once you guys arrived. So that's good. Actually, like, we were waiting for the first years to come, so we were like, excited to see new faces, new minds. Yep.
So the first topic we wanted to talk about was about your design.
Yeah, and we also wanted to know more about what you're doing now, because it's so interesting to see how after school all of us have taken different paths from product design, and you were talking about sustainable design and starting like a company of your own with your family. So what's that like? What exactly do you do now?
So what do I do exactly now? But before that, like, I think what I would like to speak a little bit about, like, what kind of pushed me to go in this direction or take this path was that, you know, you always hear people say, like, you know, work for 4 or 5 years, get some experience, and then you know, you're ready to start something on your own. But I was lucky enough to, you know, have my parents who are already, they've already started something. So I was like, they've already started something and there is a good base. So I should definitely, like, you know, come here. And like, when you talk about sustainable design or a healthy lifestyle, I was finding it very difficult to kind of follow that ideal thing in a city. So the thing is, like, you know, you want to have unadulterated food, you want to have clean air, you want to be able to be free, I mean, in terms of roaming around, especially with COVID. So these were other factors which, you know, made me choose this, because it's a total lifestyle change. Like, you know, you're with animals all the time, I mean, not all the time, but basically you're spending a lot of time in nature, and it teaches a lot of things. Coming to what I'm doing here is, I feel my design, the amount of time I spend on design has gone down much drastically, like, compared to what we used to do in college, like the amount of sketching and, you know, brainstorming, team discussions, because not many people to discuss with. And also there's other tasks which I'm starting to learn about, like if it's you know, e-commerce, managing logistics for deliveries, making sure that there's sometimes raw materials, you know, making sure there's a good inventory of the raw materials and also the stock, you know, dealing with the clients, making sure their orders reach on time. And then also I manage the social media part. So thinking about new campaigns, you know, how can we, you know, bring more awareness about sustainable products and also, yeah, promote the brand so we can increase our sales. That is there. So I'm trying to continue to learn new skills and develop, you know, newer skills.
Yeah. So it's interesting that you were talking about how, in terms of design, like sketching, ideation, just in general, like what we used to do in college or what we do for a project, you're saying has come down. Do you miss that? Do you feel that's a negative?
Yeah, definitely. I miss it a lot. That's the thing I miss the most. Definitely, I think it's a little bit negative part of it. Because like, see, in design, you always need to bounce off ideas, right? So
yeah,
I definitely want to build a team. So currently we just have one graphic design intern. So she's helping us with graphic design. You know, we're creating some animation videos and stuff.
Mm.
So now and then we have few interns, like one or two interns working remotely. So I feel that also,
yeah,
I don't like that much, because I really miss how we used to, you know, sit in our college ka studio, either it was in France,
yeah,
or even in Pune, like, you know, have your cubicle, and then, you know, you have all your,
yeah,
stuff put up, and the team is physically present there. So, you know, you can, after you finish your formal discussions, there's a lot of scope to do a lot of informal bonding and, you know, have,
mm,
joke around, and that actually increases the team dynamics, I feel. So
yeah,
that's fully missing here. So the plan is to, like, make it like a place where people, once they want to work with us, like when we have more designers, they can stay here in the farm. They have the option to come stay here. So we can have good accommodation for them here, and then there'll be the studio space, and then they can,
mm,
experience the farm lifestyle, and be here. And I feel that being in such a environment also affects the way you think.
Yeah.
So that way I feel everyone can, you know, kind of be on the same page. That's what I feel. So yeah, I definitely miss the design part and working with people.
The reason why I asked was because for me, what I'm missing is doing freelancing is that I'm practicing the muscle that it takes to maybe all the stuff that we've done in college, sketching, ideation, really honing storytelling, which we like also get to. But what I think is kind of a lacuna for me is I don't get to experiment with a lot of material. I don't like go and have a very hands-on experience. And when I look at the Vistaraku Instagram page, where you put a lot of the stories to promote the whole process and educate people on exactly how all the products on that Vistaraku sells, it's very interesting, because I feel like a lot of people in today's time have the bookish knowledge, but I don't know, I just see it as a really positive thing, that because I think it adds a lot of to understand materials and processes as a industrial designer, that with all three of us have the same background in. It feels like to not have that, and also like to not have like maybe engineering, but the basics of engineering know-how, it feels like there's something kind of missing, and you feel a little bit of an imposter syndrome. But do you feel like that holds a bit of truth?
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like, you know, there's no point like of, you know, designing something which cannot be made, or probably it can be made, but you can't make it.
Yeah.
And then it's just always a idea, which is very nice. It's like kind of like artistic, but I personally don't get any excitement out of it. Like, there's no rush, right? Like, the excitement is like you get this crazy idea or this very interesting idea, which is, you know, exciting you, and you feel that it can be, you know, it can create a story, or you know, it can send out a message or make a statement, and it has to be physically present. So making that definitely is important, and I feel my experience at Butterfly Kitchen Appliances helped me in terms of understanding manufacturing a bit more, in terms of plastic manufacturing and hydraulic press, so different metal forming. So I feel much more clearer. Like, when I have an idea, I feel more than from college. Now I can kind of think, okay, these are gonna be the steps, and then next step is to find vendors who can actually do this. And luckily I have a 3D printer, so basic stuff I can print and test out. So I enjoy doing that.
So you mentioned about handling social media for your company, and that reminded me that even on your personal social media, I've noticed like you like making videos and recording like these candid moments and experiments, and that's super fun for us to watch always. And
thanks.
It makes me super curious, like, we are all designers in this very, you know, social media driven age. So, and to be authentic online in this kind of an atmosphere, I'm sure it's not something that everyone does, but like how do you manage to stay super candid online?
I mean, I definitely feel like, see, Instagram, I use Instagram more to, I feel it's like a tool to express myself, and I feel personally I'm a person who likes to express. I'm in most scenarios an extrovert, and like you know how extroverts are, right? Like, you get a lot of energy from speaking and interacting, and so Instagram is one.
So you consider yourself an extrovert?
Yeah, at most, in most scenarios, because I've also seen my introvert side. So like in college I was pretty extrovert, but when I was doing my internship in Amsterdam and I was not having any friends, and you know, it was just like in the studio also, just like honestly it was just me and my mentor. So I mean, I was chill with her, but then after that, like, I had no social life, or I would feel very weird to approach people randomly, because it's weird, right? So coming back to social media, how do I be so candid? I mean, I just feel like I'm expressing myself, whatever I try to be. Definitely there's obviously like so many other sides of me, which, you know, you're not seeing, right? Because, you know, there's probably some other emotions like sadness or like depression or, I mean, frustration. But I mean, whatever, like when I'm in a good mood, then I'm like, you know what, let's do something fun and share it. Because, yeah, I mean, you're in the whole culture, the scene of the trends, you know, you watch something and you want to make something also, and then you want to see what people think about it. So then the likes and then the dopamine, it's like a reward for me to, like, when you work, really feel this dopamine thing is something I think a lot about in your day. Like, like if you get too much dopamine in this beginning of the day, I don't know if I'm digressing from the topic, but you lose motivation to work. I've noticed this a lot with myself. So when you let yourself get good amount of dopamine in the beginning of the day, so like you start off and you're like, start off watching your favorite Netflix show, like one episode, okay, you get a good hit, and then you open Instagram, you see your thing, you have 2-3, I mean, you have some 10-30 likes, more hit you got, and now you don't feel like working. Like, if you see, like, so basically this is what you would probably do on a Sunday. So like your day starts with that, and then there's no reward, right? Like, you already got the reward, so there's nothing else to gain from it. So that's the other side of it.
Yeah, and what's also cool is when we see this kind of a personality and this, like, this way of candid, authentic documenting come through your design work as well.
There's strong storytelling to kind of reach to the final product, and every product is so unique, but then people are so convinced, like they're so mesmerized by the story, because that's the first thing I remember the first time I saw your work as a senior, because we needed to we were all looking for like, oh, how do we like how is it all done, how do you present your work? And one of the most unique way everybody was going gaga over was your work, because you had made a bench, and what was interesting was that the whole bench was sketched out, the whole thing was really sketched out, and in a very artistic and in a very I don't know, like a very impressionist way. I don't know how to explain, but it was one of those things which one doesn't have to be an artist, one doesn't have to understand art.
How much do you think your storytelling impacts your design, and like how much of that comes from your personal life?
I think that's good. Good question. I'm thinking about it. I feel it all started, I think, when my mom, she used to read me and my brother a lot of storybooks. So I was never a reader, but she used to read us storybooks. And the ones which I think had an impact on me were Dr. Seuss, the Dr. Seuss books. So if you've ever you can check them out. You already know that the topics are so random. Like it's just like, you know, there's like a blue fish, green fish, two, like, you know, cat in a hat. And then the thing is, what I think at a young age I saw is that to like say or to draw something, it doesn't have to be real, right? I mean anything can, you can have the freedom to create whatever you like, whatever comes to your mind, and there's nothing wrong about it, and it can actually be fun. I think that kind of went into my head in a very young age without me realizing. And I feel that helps me not be very afraid to share my thoughts, like through sketches or when I speak. I mean, if it's a drawing, it's possible. I mean, it's just a drawing, right? You don't have to take it that seriously. Or if it's a thought, just think it or just say it out. It's not like, you know, you're going to be fined or someone's going to find fault with it. So that. And then I think that encouragement was there at home. To, you know, be creative, and majorly I think from my mom, her reading, and then Dr. Seuss. So that I think was a starting point. And then my grandmother used to really enjoy listening stories from my grandmother. So they would be something, you know, like moral stories, you know, stories about moral, panchatantra, all of these stories. And I got into like Amar Chitra Katha.
Yeah.
I mean that was my level of reading. Like even if though I was in like 7th or 8th, I would just be able to you know, focus only on those kind of books, and I used to enjoy it. But I think that's I really enjoyed the whole concept of the whole experience of storytelling. And then we were in college and I feel like when I had to tell you know, the jury or someone something, I felt that I had to like tell them from the beginning everything, like what was the starting point and the ending point, and this was like to create a story around it was very important. And for me, like it was very, for me as a person, it's very important to show like the true thought, like I think like the honesty in my story or my journey. I don't like to cook up stuff for the sake of it, or because it's not true, right? So there's nothing, there's no purity in it, you know, there's no like truth in it. So like, you know, you have to build it on a solid foundation, because in terms of like my own conscience or even when I'm working with a team, there has to be a narrative which all of us can follow. So it's kind of like a spine, you know, like a spine or like a structure, which, you know, we can, in the beginning of the project itself, you have this structure and we all can have a common vision to work towards thanks to the story. So stories, and then making mood boards, inspiration boards. So your whole team is having the same visuals, or you know, you're able to share your thoughts with them exactly, like visually, because there's like, I can see a dog and you can like think of a furry dog, but I could think of like a skinny dog. So so I mean, you have to make more context. So the story does that for the team, and then in the later phase, it's very useful to pitch it. If you're working in a company, then your director, design director, or if you're working for, you know, yourself, then a client, and then, you know, sales. It helps in sales, right? That story will carry forward into your advertisements or your posts or.
And do you feel like you've brought that kind of that sensibility of storytelling to Vistaraku as well with all the Instagram posts? And yesterday I saw, for instance, you had put out the hydraulic press, which showed how the flat leaf plate is you know, set into like shape, and then you had the dog as well, which is a, so, and people just love dogs. And so do you feel like subconsciously that's also like one of your one of the assets that you're bringing to the to the company?
I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel like they're gonna become very famous, the dogs, more famous than me soon.
Yeah.
And in terms of storytelling, I feel there's definitely more potential. Like it can be pushed definitely more, and you know, it can be much more like something which people can follow, because there's a lot of thing of consistency, and they, like you said, you know, like there's animals involved, and make it more exciting. That definitely can increase a lot more. It just needs that much more dedication, right? I probably need to get another person who can be constantly on this, and I can work with that person, like you know, but this person needs to be on it full time, or I'd be like, I'll do this full time and then someone else does something else. So definitely team has to expand. The dog, I mean he was there, so like, why not? He was got him, he was very interested. I was like, you know, doing this, and he's like, what is this? I also want some of this, whatever you're taking picture video of. So
I think if to get context, people should start following Vistaraku on Instagram, because some people might be confused at this point.
Yeah, check us out.
Shout out to Vistaraku. Okay, so this is a good segue from storytelling to one of the things you talked about was in recent times you're thinking about virtual personas and how each of us have a different virtual persona or a unique virtual persona on the net, and then of course like it again branches into multiple different ones on different platforms. Like if you're on LinkedIn, you have a different way of conducting yourself. On Facebook, you have, and there's like a very famous meme also that people have made on this. So it's
that's me on LinkedIn, that's me on Instagram.
So what are your thoughts on that? Do you like, everybody's now probably like in the future, coming future, more and more people are going to develop virtual personas?
Yeah, I mean, like we can all see it happening, right? Like every app we have has a profile pic, so you know, everyone's seeing that. When I see you text me, I'm always seeing that picture of you. So you know, whatever the way you're dressed or the whatever lighting it is, I'm thinking, I start to create an image of you in that way, and whatever you post, probably there's like 10 other things you're not doing, but I only see this. So you know, I start to create a impression of you, and like you, and then people are putting in more effort, you can see, you know, to curate or improve or enhance their virtual persona. And I think we were having a chat about this, about NFTs and this stuff, that how people are, you know, they're going to like your profile pic is going to be like an NFT, you know. So it could be like a GIF or animation. And I think there was some advertisement I was seeing where, you know, people's heads, you know, they're texting each other and their head just like swaps to their profile pic. Anyways, so like yeah, then you know you become a totally different person on the internet, and yeah, I feel it's also empowering for a lot of people, because I you know there's a lot of people who are just pressured with society so much that this kind of other persona for them is an escape
Yeah,
and
a second life.
a second life, and it's a way for them to express. I think that in that way it's good. It's very good, but it can be also, I mean, I feel when it comes to like relationships or something, I mean, or just
Yeah.
like, you know, you imagine you meet someone online and then you're just like, you're seeing this persona and then you really don't, you know, understand that person. So what are your guys' thoughts about that here?
Yeah, I think it's good to have that control to craft your own online persona and choose how you want to portray yourself. But then I think on the other end, sometimes it can also be seen as a negative thing if you are losing that authenticity, because I'm wondering if you owe it to your audience to be authentic, because then there's people looking at you, and sometimes if you are like super famous online, people are also looking up to you. So what kind of ideals are you setting up? What kind of examples are you setting up? So I was wondering what you guys think about this. Like, do you think we owe to our audience to be authentic? Or how far can we really go with like crafting this whole online persona for ourselves?
Everybody is kind of trying to grasp the idea of what's going to be in the future. And I do think that it's not very different from the real world, because we have a different persona for how we, like, we put on a different persona when we are with friends. We put on a different one when we are with parents, a different one when we're in front of our employer, or like when we're in a formal setting. I just think that it's just another, like the virtual world is like it's a world, so you also have multiple personas. I think what's different from the real world is that it's very, very easy to curate yourself on the internet. You start to become like an AI, kind of like learning from your initial mistakes, kind of how we're doing with this podcast as well, with every, like, our goal with this podcast would also be to understand what mistakes we're making, and then by maybe like hopefully by the 100th episode, we might look back and say that, okay, here are the mistakes that we were making, and we've improved upon all of that. But then the 100th episode, we might like really become something different from how we are in real life or how we talk, or maybe we change our real life according to how we are online. So my thing is, I think it's very easy for us to become kind of like a hi like us to kind of curate, like just highlight reels of ourselves on the internet. And I think, but it seems inevitable. I mean, it's something, it's one of those, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I think coming back to like, I think when you were saying that, anyways, we have a lot of different personas in different situations. I feel what is changing is that, like, I mean, even though you're different in different situations, your physical appearance is pretty much the same, and there's so much of like facial expressions, right? And which are like realistic. I mean, you can't really control them as much as you could. Like, you know, someone could say say something to you, and even though you don't have a happy reaction to it, you can just put a smiley face and, you know, be like, you know, smiley face, and they think, oh, they like this, and it starts to, you know, create a whole different thing. I think that's why, like, you know, this whole body language and this thing is a big, big thing. So there is, I feel there is a difference between like you create having a version of you in the metaverse, which is basically, I mean, if I understand it right, is like just like a virtual self of you, right? And then you can do shit to yourself, like you can customize yourself, like you can be naked, you can put on Gucci, you can buy some Gucci stuff, and then
Yeah, I think it's in line with like just making an alternate version of you. And if you're skinny in real life, you can kind of alter your character or your persona to, you know, have a, I don't know, like have muscles and stuff and like kind of live a life that's...
Yeah, it's like Ready Player One, if you've watched that movie.
Yeah.
So they're like in a metal box in somewhere. But then, you know, they have this whole... they can go to a different world where they can be whoever they want, like you said.
Yeah.
So probably that will happen.
But do you feel we've all like, we now the metaverse is coming, all of these games and like, for instance, there's Fortnite and then there is Roblox and then there is, my sister plays Roblox and then there's Minecraft. But when we were young, we had the GTA games, and one of the most interesting things was that almost everybody, no matter gender, age, whatever, like background, everybody loved stealing cars, breaking the laws.
Yeah, definitely.
Every once in a while going and like punching some random passerby.
Yeah.
Everybody did that.
Yeah,
I doubt anybody who's played the game hasn't at least tried it. My sister, who's like 12, I had like the very old PSP version of it. Even she loves doing that. What? So is it like, I've read a few philosophers who say that a lot of people consider like the virtual persona to be kind of like not real. But they say that that's basically where because as you also mentioned, like there are societal pressures, there are laws, there are things that there are real world implications of what we do. So a lot of people don't want to be themselves in real life. And these platforms give them the opportunity to actually be themselves, which is that we all have like that innate, you know, like that... I don't know, like that primate in ourselves, which wants to like break the rules, but we don't do it because we want to be great citizens. We want to respect like basic like human rights.
I mean, I think it's just more the structure is so set in that you don't realize that. I mean, it feels difficult to break, right? It's like a pattern. That they're set in, that pattern, then that you just that thing, and sometimes I mean you really don't want to be going killing people, but you could definitely still wear a pink pant and go somewhere and then, you know, could make a statement. But then it's not that easy as compared to virtual thing. I think I want to answer what Kamaljeet asked is, do you owe it to your audience to be authentic, or the level of authenticity? I feel majorly it's such a big load, I mean burden on the content creator to actually keep up that persona for that long. I mean, after a certain time, it does take depending on how different you're going from your actual self, there's a big impact. It takes a toll on your mind. I mean, you can see this guy, Joji. I mean, now he's Joji. Before that, he was the pink guy. So he used to like videos where he would speak in a different voice, and then now you see him sing, and then you're like, what? This is his voice? I mean, so he went through a big breakdown, and his whole like, you know, you forget who you really are, and then your audience wants something, you know, they still want that. They want you to do more intense, you know, take it up a level, create more content. You start running out of content, and that I feel it's safer to actually be authentic. You can definitely make it exciting now and then, you know, like wear something funny, but I feel that it makes it more difficult for, I think for me at least, I would consider it become very difficult to keep it up consistently for a long time, to sustain it with you
yeah.
know doing something to which doesn't resonate with my myself.
Click on part 2 for even more unfiltered conversations with Tanmay.